From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The midterms are 2 weeks away. We've got to choose representatives, senators, governors. There are some big themes playing out on radio and TV as campaign ads and candidates hammer away at each other. But there's this feeling that their big issues are not our big issues. This hour on Point, the big themes of these midterms. Joining me first from Washington is Josh Kraushauer, political editor at the National Journal, editor-in-chief of The Hotline, and author of the weekly Against the Grain column. Josh, welcome. Nice to have you.
Good to be here, Jane.
So a big hour ahead here. Lots of issues to look at. Start us off with some of the hot races that you're watching right now.
Well, there are a lot of there, at least a dozen close Senate races that will shape the balance of power after the November elections. And, you know, former House Speaker Tip O'Neill famously said that all politics is local. But what we're seeing as we're 2 weeks ahead of the midterm elections, this is shaping up to be a very nationalized election. And voters are making their choices based on national issues, whether it's national security, ISIS, Ebola, healthcare, and the president's healthcare law, the economy. And on most of those issues, Republicans have built a pretty steady advantage, especially as we've gotten closer to the November election. So we're seeing a growing possibility that this could be a big Republican wave election where Republicans not only get the six seats necessary to take control of the Senate, but also could get a few more seats in some of the more competitive battleground states as well.
So do you agree with that? I mean, Democrats risk losing control of the U.S. Senate. Republicans are bullish that they will win it. How close is it really?
You have a lot of close races, but the trend lines are in the Republican direction in a lot of these very close races, whether you're talking about Colorado, North Carolina, Iowa, the big race in Arkansas between Mark Pryor and Tom Cotton. These are all close races, but the trend lines in most of them have been in the Republican direction. And when you have a national environment that favors one party, and you know, you look at the president's approval rating, you look at the generic ballot polls, which show a decent sized Republican advantage on which party they prefer to have power in the November elections, you're seeing that advantage trickle down into these individual races. So races that were close or in races that where Democrats held a small advantage a couple months ago are now trending in a Republican direction and increasing the possibility that there could be a wave, that there could be a Republican takeover, and they could pick up as many as, you know, 7, 8, or 9 seats in the fall.
What about voter apathy right now, Josh? I keep reading about the so what factor among voters in this election cycle.
There's a lot of voter apathy, but that's sort of par for the course with a lot of midterm elections. Voters pay attention to presidential races. They don't tend to pay as close attention to congressional races. But there is also a gap between both parties, and one that's been increasing during President Obama's administration, where the Democratic coalition is built up of groups that actually are much less likely to show up at the polls for a midterm election. And that's why the Democratic Party is investing so much money and time into trying to get their core voters out, get, you know, the coalition that President Obama does best with are African Americans, college-aged voters, single women, Latinos as well. And you look at every national poll and every poll of those constituencies, and they are not interested. They're not as excited as more older conservative voters that tend to support Republicans. So there is apathy. I mean, midterm elections tend to engender apathy. But Republicans do have an intensity advantage where their voters are angry. They're upset about certain policies of this administration. And Democrats aren't as motivated. They're not feeling excited about the way things are headed, and they're not as motivated as Republicans are to head to the polls.
Let me bring another couple of voices into the conversation right now. Mona Charon joins us from Washington, D.C. She's columnist with Creators Syndicate, a contributor to the National Review and Washington Examiner, and a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Her piece earlier this week in the Washington Examiner is titled, What Women Want. Mona, welcome as always to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Glad to be here.
And from Baltimore, we're joined by Charles D. Ellison. He's a politics contributor to TheRoot.com and Washington correspondent for the Philadelphia Tribune. He's also a veteran political strategist. His earlier piece in The Root this week is titled, Democratic Candidates Must Work Harder to Lock in Black Voters. Charles, welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing? Thanks.
Well, I'm okay. Let me start with you, Charles, and have you respond to what Josh Kraushauer just talked about, the Republicans having this intensity advantage in these midterm elections. How do you see it?
Right. There is this intensity advantage that they do have, and it's very problematic for Democrats. It's also, what's also very problematic for Democrats are sort of a few things, or sort of a convergence of several different factors. I mean, one is, yeah, it's an off cycle. It's not a brand name bling bling campaign or candidate that's there that's going to attract some of those traditional Democratic voters or demographics like African-Americans, youth voters, even some women voters and also Latinos as well. So, you know, they're not really paying attention to those off-cycle elections. That's partly due to some, you know, the apathy that Josh talked about. There's also this feeling of disenchantment, of people feeling very disillusioned, very disappointed and upset with how things are going nationally in Washington, how things are just going with politics in general, how they feel on a local level. In that sense, you know, politics is a bit local because people are just feeling a bit depressed about the economic situation, for example. For example, and I talked about that in that piece in theroot.com where, you know, the black unemployment rate, actually I have that coming out today, where, you know, where we're talking about how the black unemployment rate is still double that of the national unemployment rate, double that of their white peers and also their Latino peers. So you have this sense, particularly within the African-American community, that, well, politics really isn't working for me, so why should I come out and vote?
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a big problem for Democrats. So, you know, also...
Charles, let me jump in and ask Mona to sort of respond to that. What about this disenchantment? Does it only affect Democrats in a negative way, or can you pull, as Republicans, some of those votes away, Mona?
Well, I'm all for Republicans attempting to pull votes away, and I think any candidate running for office in America should appeal to all Americans equally and not attempt to balkanize the electorate and say, you know, we're appealing to this group or that group, women or blacks or Hispanics or gays or whatever. But there has been a tendency over the years for Democrats to use scare tactics to get black voters to come out for them, to claim that if they do, that if Republicans are successful, that it will be a return to Jim Crow or, you know, really terrible things. And even this year, you're seeing some circulars going out in some House races that suggest that the KKK will be right on the heels of a Republican victory. And that's obviously very unfortunate. But I think Charles's point about the situation, the objective reality for black Americans in the sixth year of the Obama presidency is undeniable. I mean, the unemployment rate is terribly high. Poverty is way up. Labor force participation is down. Things are very grim, not just for African Americans, but for working class Americans in general. The very rich have done well, but for a lot of people in the middle class, the people for whom Obama claimed to speak, there's very little to show for it, and so a certain amount of disenchantment was inevitable.
Let me play some sound here. Here is President Obama at a weekend rally on Chicago's South Side, stumping for Illinois Governor Democrat Pat Quinn, urging voters to get out and vote, to get their relatives and friends to go to the polls in 2 weeks.
You've got to grab your friends. You've got to grab your coworkers. You know, don't just get the folks who you know are going to vote. You got to find Cousin Pookie. He's sitting on the couch right now watching football. Hadn't voted in the last 5 elections. You've got to grab him and tell him to go vote.
And specifically directed to the African-American vote, here was PBS host Tavis Smiley on ABC's This Week on Sunday saying that Democrats are reportedly relying on the black vote to win in these coming midterms, but that they may be making a huge mistake.
A newsflash, if you're relying on the black vote in a midterm election, and I'm not suggesting that black folk don't care about this, but if you're relying on that vote, that I think is uninspired because we have double and triple digit unemployment in the African-American community. And again, if the message is something other than employment and what we're going to do for you, then what's the reason to go vote?
Josh Krossauer, speak to that. I mean, there's Tavis Smiley saying no good reason to vote, quote, if you're black or brown, other than helping to save the Democrats' hide.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating theme in the midterm elections. And it's also a sign of the times that the president is campaigning in heavily Democratic Illinois, heavily Democratic Maryland. And the primary goal of those two campaign stops on Sunday was to rally the African-American voters in both of those states. The Illinois rally for Governor Pat Quinn was at Chicago State University, a predominantly African-American university in the city of Chicago. So this is not – there's no sugarcoating it. The president is now just catering to his base. He absolutely needs African-American voters and other minorities to show up at the midterm elections, or else it will be a big wave. It will be a significant Republican sweep in the midterm elections. But, you know, I was actually in Chicago last week, and it was really interesting. Republicans have never competed for the African American, rarely competed for the African American vote. They usually don't go after minority voters in Chicago. But the gubernatorial candidate in Illinois, Bruce Rauner, was actually spending time on the south side of Chicago campaigning with African American businessmen. So he's not going to win much of the vote, but even Republicans are thinking that the economic legacy of the president and the governor in Illinois could actually lend them to win up a handful of votes and make that race winnable.
We've got a great panel this hour talking about the midterm elections, 2 weeks and counting. We're comparing the big issues that seem to matter to voters and whether the campaigns are actually talking about those issues. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Much more after this break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the upcoming midterm elections and the issues that voters care about now. I just want to quickly stay on that last point about the African-American vote. And Charles, let me turn to you, Charles Ellison. Yeah. Are Democrats taking black voters for granted in the midterms here?
Yeah, that's been sort of an ongoing conversation for a number of years. And you can make the argument, you know, particularly when you see African-Americans starting to trend more independent. I mean, really across the board, most Americans now are starting to sort of distance themselves from political party affiliations and becoming much more independent minded. But that growth of non-affiliated African-American voters has spiked. Quite considerably in recent years. And really, I mean, it's a failure on the part of Democrats, on the part of this particular Obama White House, also on the part of a lot of folks in the advocacy community, in the African-American advocacy community in particular, of making a connection between political process, the importance of still participating in the political process, and public policy outcomes. And when they fail to make that connection on a messaging level, which is what you kind of hear that too from Obama in places, President Obama in places like Illinois, in places like Maryland, mm-hmm. where, you know, he's talking about getting Cousin Pookie off the couch, but he's not really crystallizing for the black voters, for that black audience. Well, you know, these are the reasons, these are the specific challenges that you're faced with. I know what you're going through, and this is why, step by step, why you've got to go out and participate in this process and vote. And beyond the vote, after you vote, this is what you have to do. So, you know, there's really this lack of a civics lesson, not just in terms of the African-American vote, but in terms of the national electorate. People just are distanced from the political process because, you know, the folk, the politicians, the leaders, the advocacy professionals, they're not doing a very good job of telling people and illustrating, hey, this is how this all works, and this is how you can make a contribution.
So a lot of talk about the African-American vote. Mona Charon, what about the gender gap in these midterms? So many people talking about the women's vote and women's issues. You wrote today in the National Journal that Democrats, quote, are attempting to reprise some of these themes that worked in 2012, notably the war on women. In what way do you mean that?
Well, so the Colorado race was kind of emblematic. Mark Udall got the unfortunate nickname Mark Uterus for his attempt throughout the most of this campaign year to focus exclusively on issues of gynecology, as if women were going to be, you know, trooping to the polls only to vote about abortion and contraception, which are not women's top priorities as voters, by the way. All polls show that those are rank actually fairly low on their list of priorities. But further, there was a lot of dishonesty in the way that Udall presented Gardner's views, and that backfired against him, even to the point where the Denver Post endorsed Gardner, saying they were kind of disgusted with this over-the-top war on women rhetoric and false.
Let me play some of that sound, Mona. Here's Democratic Senator Mark Udall going after Udall's challenger, Republican candidate Cory Gardner, for his positions on abortion and birth control.
Congressman Cory Gardner's history promoting harsh anti-abortion laws is disturbing. Gardner sponsored a bill to make abortion a felony, including cases of rape and incest. Gardner even championed an 8-year crusade to outlaw birth control here in Colorado.
Josh Krashauer, how are these women's issues playing across the country, would you say?
Well, there's always been a gender gap in recent American politics. That's nothing new. The big question is, because of these ads and the relentless focus from Democratic candidates on abortion, on contraception, on issues appealing to women, would it be bigger than it usually is? And it seems like in most of the races, it's actually not been bigger. The gender gap has actually narrowed in some of the big races. Colorado is, as Mona was talking about, Mark Udall, over half of the Democratic ads in that Colorado Senate race that are aired by Democrats have focused on abortion and contraception. And if you look at the latest polling, the gender gap is narrower than it is nationally, and it's narrower than it would normally be in Colorado, what a lot of people expected it to be in Colorado. And now Democrats are – I wouldn't say they're backing away from those attacks, but they're starting to diversify their playbook, if you will, as Cory Gardner starts to have momentum in that campaign. And then you have Iowa, where you have a very charismatic female candidate, Joni Ernst, who does better with men. She certainly – there is a gender gap in that race. She's winning over men. Her opponent, Democratic Congressman Bruce Braley, is winning over women, but the gender gap is smaller than it usually is. And that's allowing her to have a small lead in the polls in the state of Iowa, which is a crucial battleground Senate race.
Right. So and here, you know what? Let me play some of this down from that, Josh, because I'm glad you bring that up. Senator Bruce Braley and Republican candidate Joni Ernst. This is from an NPR piece. They convened 6 Iowa women to hear their reactions to this debate. One of these women, a college sophomore and a Republican, had this response to the question about women's issues in this race and the importance of electing a female candidate.
To me, it's important to have a woman, I think, in the Senate. And from Iowa, I think a lot of women in Iowa have a lot to bring to the table. But it's not important to me right now if she's not the right woman for
it doesn't tip the balance
no,
for you.
No, it doesn't.
Charles Ellison, how do you see it? I mean, I hear a lot of women say, you know, nobody's talking about my issues. You're making broad generalizations, a lot of presumptions about what I care about, but neither party really gets it.
Right. You know, and Josh touched on this earlier when he talked about his analysis about there being national issues here at stake. And so, you know, what you have is Democrats have sort of boxed themselves in as far as how they're addressing or approaching women's issues by just assuming that all women want to talk about in this election are like reproductive issues, issues like abortion or issues like, you know, reproductive rights, et cetera. But, you know, at the end of the day, women voters, especially, you know, when you start getting into a conversation about what moms want, for example, because, you know, moms go out and vote. Moms want security. Moms want stability. That's why you have issues like Ebola and ISIL, what's happening in the Middle East. You know, also, you know, just sort of general, still those persistent themes about the state of the economy and how confident people are in the economy. That's all about security and stability. And you do get the sense that women voters still a little bit insecure. They don't feel that stable. And that's what they're going to vote on. I think Dems have sort of boxed themselves in and sort of underestimated, you know, the other types of issues that women are concerned about.
Women's issues have also been a big issue in the Senate race in New Hampshire. Here's Scott Brown and Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen. They're in a dead heat in the New Hampshire race. Shaheen went after Brown on women's reproductive rights. And in this campaign ad, Brown called that a smear and accused her of the sin of voting with President Obama.
You may have seen that Senator Shaheen is running an ad calling into question my support for women's health care. I want you to know the facts. I'm pro-choice. I support continued funding for Planned Parenthood, and I believe women should have access to contraception. After 6 years of voting with President Obama, Senator Shaheen has resorted to a smear campaign to distract voters from her record.
I got to get some callers in here. They're lined up around the block. Jeannie is first up in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Hi, Jeannie. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Go ahead.
I am a citizen activist here in Kentucky, and I work with a nonprofit. It's a grassroots statewide organization for social justice issues. And we have been working so hard to mobilize voters and empower underserved communities in our area. And, you know, we try really hard to inform voters. So we have things like KentuckyElection.org, where people can see what the candidates have responded to questions so that they can be informed when they go to vote, which empowers people. You know, they feel more comfortable going to vote when they haven't typically done that.
But generally, do you think, as a citizen activist, Jeannie, do you think people feel like issues, their issues, are being addressed in this campaign?
Well, I know here in Kentucky, you know, we've got a huge Senate race happening. And personally, I can tell you that I feel like the issues are being addressed. Now, we're not always happy with either candidate. You know, it's sometimes it's like the mm-hmm. lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that people, they want to hear what people think, because we're starting to see how these political players, you know, we have an incumbent Republican who has routinely voted down for women's equal pay and all of these things. You know, as a woman, that is important to me. Mm-hmm. And I want someone who's going to fight for what I think.
So, Jeannie,
you know, we are.
Thank you very much. I hear it. I want to get to another voice here. Kristen is in Des Moines, Iowa. Kristen, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Uh-huh.
So I have a couple of comments. The first is just a direct response. The Democrats aren't the only ones who do negative attack ads, at least here with Bruce Braley versus Joni Ernst in Des Moines. I hear constant misrepresentation of the things that Bruce Braley has done and said. Furthermore, to actually answer your question, I feel like people are taking too much of a look at the short term here. Look at how much a divided government has done for us over the past 6 years. And we really need to consider that in 2 years from now, we're going to be looking at voting for the presidency here. So let's take, for example, if we get another Democratic president, but we've got a Republican Senate, what are we going to be dealing with when, you know, we're maybe looking at trying to appoint somebody to the U.S. Supreme Court, for example?
Kristen, thank you very much. To your point, here's a Facebook user in Vermont who says, I don't expect the cycle of partisanship to end with this election, nor the next. Josh Krushauer, how do you, I mean, I asked you this at the beginning, you know, this sort of voter apathy piece, but you hear it over and over and over again. And I get the sense people don't really know what to do about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very volatile electorate, and it's been a very volatile electorate going all the way back to the Bush administration in the 2006 midterm elections when Democrats took control of both the House and the Senate. And ever since then, in pretty much every election, both presidential and midterm, we've seen an enormous amount of dissatisfaction, enormous amount of volatility with voters, independent voters particularly, switching their preferences from Republicans to Democrats willy-nilly based on what's happening in the country. And 2014, again, is shaping up to be another wave election. 4 out of the 5 past years could be very landslide-ish historic types of congressional or presidential elections. So if the U.S. had a parliamentary system, there would be a lot of votes of no confidence in the leadership of our government. And we don't have a system like that, but you are seeing a tremendous amount of people who think the country's headed on the wrong track. They don't like Republicans or Democrats, and they tend to vote out the party who's in power, who holds the presidency. But it doesn't mean that they prefer either party. There's just an enormous amount of dissatisfaction and volatility.
Here's Regina in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Regina. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
My disappointment has been in that this seems to be an election about nothing. You don't see any real concrete issues that are going to affect us. There are old issues that are being discussed to me, like the women's health, of course. Wasn't that addressed in the Affordable Care Act and things like that? That is now trying to be torn down. I think for the last 6 years, we've lived from crisis to crisis that aren't about the real issues of governing. And what we've heard in mainstream media is from one crisis to the next, when Democrats aren't touting the progress that has been made. Unemployment is at its lowest. So I disagree with your speaker. The employment numbers are lower than they've been in 10, 12 years. And
for some of the population, but I think that point was not in the African-American population. Regina, thank you very much. Mona, speak to our caller here. Regina, she says, we're living from crisis to crisis. This election is about nothing. Republicans are in there too, right, Mona?
Right. Look, there. As I think Charles was saying, or maybe it was Josh. You know, there in different states, there are different issues that have come to the fore. Climate. They're now trying to focus on climate in Colorado, education, North Carolina, outsourcing in Georgia. Different things come up in different regions. But in general, in the sixth year of a presidential term, you do have a tendency to see a dissatisfied electorate rendering a verdict on the leadership of the president. And this president has conveyed over the last couple of years in particular, that he is not in command of events either domestically or internationally. We've seen a crisis after crisis of governance. That is, you know, the Democrats are supposed to be the party of government, and we've seen the disastrous rollout of healthcare.gov. We've seen the scandals involving the IRS and the Veterans Administration. We've seen the border crisis with all of the immigrants coming across. Internationally, things seem to be aflame, and the president seems to be sort of rushing to put out fires or failing to respond adequately.
So Charles Ellis and Mona, let me respond. Charles, respond to that then.
Yeah, you know, we can't also sort of take the onus of that, of what's been going on, of a lot of that feeling of crisis and of dysfunction in Washington. We can't take that off Republicans either. You know, and Republicans, I mean, here we have an election where a lot of the polarization that we're seeing, particularly in bodies or institutions like the House, is caused by a lot of the, you know, sort of what Democrats have been saying. And it's a cogent point. You know, it's sort of like game rigging on the state level as far as primarily Republican governors and Republican state legislatures playing games with redistricting congressional districts, gerrymandering, or like in states like Virginia where you sort of crowd up or you bunch up black voters, you know, into ineffective congressional districts. And so that's created a polarized kind of environment and climate in Washington where nothing's getting done, or in a situation where the president feels like, okay, I try to do one thing and you don't like that. You know, Mona, go ahead.
I mean, I agree with Charles to a point, but not quite, because I think, wouldn't he agree that tendency that he referred to as a Republican plot, you know, to bunch up blacks in specific districts was actually a bipartisan deal that was made between Democrats and Republicans in the 1990s to create these majority-minority districts, which, I mean, if Charles disapproves of them, I'm all with him. I disapprove of them also.
Yeah.
But it was a deal that both parties were happy with.
You know, both parties play that game. You're absolutely right. But the other thing, too, I mean, we didn't even get on voter ID and voter suppression strategies that Republicans have been employing in very, very key battleground states. I mean, in play, we just got over over the Supreme Court deciding on cases, voter ID cases in Wisconsin and Texas. But it's not even just voter ID.
Why get rid of
early voting? What's wrong with early voting? Why is that such a big problem?
Especially when
there hasn't been any fraud proven on a massive national scale.
A lot to talk about, and we're discussing the 2014 midterms this hour, just 2 weeks away, a lively conversation. What are the big themes, the big issues in the electorate? What does it care about? What are the campaigns pushing? My guest, Mona Charon, columnist with the Creator Syndicate and a contributor to the National Review and Washington Examiner. Charles Ellison, political contributor to TheRoot.com. And Josh Kraushauer, political editor at the National Review. Much more to get to, including more of your calls. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking midterms this hour. Let's get a few more calls in here. Bill is in New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Bill. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. You know, what really frustrates me is the inability of commentators, all of them, to address the failure of the sitting Congress to get anything done. I think that the president has made some honest efforts and has worked within the constraints that he lives with. But I just can't understand how anybody could consider that the possibility of a Republican control, complete control of the Congress, would do any good. There would be even less that got done over the next 2 years. And Christ knows what that would mean for the next four.
Bill, thank you. Mark is calling from Fletcher, Vermont. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I'm talking about my son, his friends, and what they're speaking to today concerning being part of this country. And they see...
How old is your son, Mark?
He's 24 years old and very intelligent, but disengaged because he sees, you know, the money, big money, pushing both parties away from the real issues and going offshore with a lot of that money and treating us as if we're just another third world slave labor camp and that we're not good enough for infrastructure. We're not good enough for health care. We're not good enough for education anymore, and we're going to pay for it through all these schemes that they've contrived to create bubbles that have been very damaging to the economy in general and specifically burdening the future of young people.
Mark, I get it, and it's a terrific point, and I'm glad you called to make it. So two issues really there, Josh Krushauer. I mean, let's talk about these disengaged younger voters, and then also the deluge of big money that Mark talked about that's raining down on key battleground states, much of it from outside donors who are often not disclosed or who are not disclosed. What's the impact of that on voters and really younger voters as well?
Well, as far as the money, I mean, there's been a record amount of outside money spent on both sides. Harry Reid's former staff have been very involved with their super PAC called the Senate Majority PAC and have spent tens of millions of dollars. Believe they're the single most single biggest spender, rather, from outside groups, but they're closely trailed by American Crossroads, which is Karl Rove's organization that spent tens of millions of dollars also for Republicans in these big battleground Senate races, a couple House races as well. But, you know, Democrats have tried to make this a campaign issue by raising the specter of the Koch brothers, who have also spent quite a bit of money in the Senate battleground races. But like the you know, it's a base issue. It's an issue that a lot of voters who pay close attention to politics that are very liberal and don't like the influx of money in politics have paid attention to. But when you look at the polling, it really is only an issue that motivates the Democratic base. So when you see these ads, and there have been quite a few of them in some of these close Senate races, in particular Iowa, but a few other races as well, voters, the people who are just trying to decide who to vote for, don't really – these ads about money and politics and the Koch brothers, it doesn't really affect their decision. It's a sign that – you know, people say they want less money in politics. It's an issue that they are overwhelmingly on the side of Democrats with. But when it comes to making a voting decision, they generally don't rank that as a top issue. So it's one of those issues that Democrats have used in quite a few of these campaigns to mobilize the base. But it hasn't really worked as effectively as I think they expected.
Let's go to Buffalo, New York. Bill's on the line. Hi, Bill. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi. How are you? Well, I am calling. I've never called before. I'm a little bit nervous. I don't have all the politic terminology and whatnot. I'm just a regular guy. And even a little bit worse because right now I'm on disability. Excuse me. And my wife's working. It's very difficult for us. And when I see this Obama, I voted for him the first term. I didn't vote him for the second term. And I'm not going to vote for the next presidential election because it's just terrible. And in Buffalo, New York, where I live here, there's buildings going up. But still, there's so many homeless people downtown. It just seems like these people are just lying. They're not doing what they're supposed to do for us. And I'm just so tired of seeing it. I wish I could do something and really voice my opinion. I'm just a little guy. I'm a nobody. That's the way I feel.
And so,
and I shouldn't feel that way.
Right. And so what are the issues that you want addressed? What do you want to hear from these politicians?
Well, I just want to say, in this Obama, he sees these people with their heads being sawed off, and he does nothing, dropping a couple of bombs. $1.5 million, by the way, per bomb. And then he's welcoming this couple of people in the U.S. that have Ebola. He's so happy because it takes the spotlight off of what's really going on over there. He's loving it. He's just going to put out this little fire, and then he's going to hope the next thing comes in, and everyone's going to be looking at that, and he's still not going to be over there. You know how many people died? I had a cousin that died in Iraq. They should have left some soldiers there. They knew this was going to happen. I knew it, and I'm not very smart.
You are terrific. I'm glad you called, Bill. Thank you very much up there in Buffalo. Let me just talk a little bit about the Obama factor, because there's a Democrat saying he voted for Obama the first time, but is terribly unhappy. I mean, talk about the Obama factor in these midterms. The rock star rallies that launched him into the White House, Josh Krushauer, they're gone. I mean, during a rare campaign appearance in Maryland, I'm reading a Reuters story here that reports a steady stream of people leaving while the president was speaking, quote, underscoring his continuing unpopularity. Dana Milbank of the Washington Post said they were fired up and ready to go home. How are Democrats in this midterm positioning themselves with this very unpopular president?
They're trying to avoid him at all costs, and he's a liability in every Senate race. The only Senate race he's actually campaigned in is in Michigan, which is a race where the Republicans have a very weak candidate, and they've essentially conceded the race a long time ago. So in all the close competitive races, even the ones that voted for President Obama in 2012, they've avoided him like the plague. And when you look at how this election has been nationalized, I mean, it's one of the big themes in the Republican campaign ads have been that President Obama didn't manage the government very effectively. He didn't, you know, the Ebola crisis has raised a lot of concerns about the effectiveness of government. The healthcare law and the exchange, that the rollout that wasn't successful was also a question about the management of government. And now you also have the question of foreign policy and then the rise of ISIS in the Middle East. They all raise questions about the president's management, and that's trickled down to some of these Democratic senators who have been in charge, have been in office during President Obama's tenure, and they've been bearing the brunt of these criticisms. So, you know, you have a state like Colorado where the president's approval rating is around 40%. And because of the nationalization of the race, the senator, Mark Udall, who's in a lot of trouble, is now seeing his approval ratings go down to about that same level. So this is a nationalized environment. And Democrats who were in office during President Obama's terms have seen their own approval ratings suffer because they've been connected with the
and
White
House. And yet President Obama said yesterday on the Reverend Al Sharpton's radio show, look at the people who are distancing themselves from me. They're all folks who vote with me. They have supported my agenda in Congress. Mona, isn't that true?
It's true. It's not all that helpful for the president to remind voters of that. I don't think the candidates will thank him for that remark because they're trying to put distance and suggest that they're going to be independent voices. And in the case of the Alison Lundergan Grimes, she wouldn't even say whether she voted for the president. So no, he is the issue, I think. And the failures of his administration are very much on the ballot. And it will, I think, force a little bit of a reckoning about what we can expect from government. Look, some of the callers who've called in have expressed this terrible disillusionment. There was such ridiculously and absurdly high hopes raised for Obama in 2008. To a degree in 2012. And, you know, the government has limits to what it can deliver, especially if it's kind of at war with the private sector, which this president really was. And he hoped to improve the lives of Americans through a huge stimulus and through a huge government-mandated health reform, and neither has worked well at all. And on the international front, he has projected weakness and made people feel insecure. And so all of those issues are in voters' minds as they head to the polls this month.
Let me just say, though, that
I think there's a danger for Republicans because, as Josh keeps saying, this looks like it's going to be a very strong Republican year, and it is. But the problem for Republicans is that Hispanic voters are not in play very much in the major Senate contests that we're seeing. And there is a danger that Republicans will learn the wrong lessons from their success this time around and think that they don't have to expand and broaden their appeal. And so I hope that they will pocket their successes but not think that their challenges in broadening their base are over. They're not.
Interesting point, Charles Ellison. I mean, is there a danger there for Republicans not to learn the lessons and that they don't have to appeal to their, you know, to women voters, to African-American voters, to those that they lost in the last election?
Right. There is a danger there. I mean, the danger is much more sort of nationalized for them than it is localized. I mean, you are seeing some signs, and I touched on this in that column on theroot.com, where you are seeing signs where if you have an attractive Republican candidate that isn't perceived as too extreme, that candidate, he or she can actually slice off a piece of the African-American vote or the Latino vote or the woman vote or what have you. I mean, I think that on a national scale, I mean, still at the end of the day, the white vote is still dominant in white, and there's still a lot of white voters that are still attracted to the Republican Party. And I think that Democrats shouldn't underestimate the potential of a quality Republican candidate in the 2016 presidential race. I think that that's still very much in play. You know, but I think that also this election is going to be about, I think for both parties, it'll be a lesson in, you know, sort of that, you know, that regular man and woman, you know, like your last caller, Bill, you know, this is like the regular man and woman election. And they're going to see that these cycles are all about people wanting that authentic person that they can touch and feel, that can kind of describe, you know, the issues and the challenges that they're going through. And the problem with politics now is that business is great for the campaign, for campaign professionals, for consultants, for advocacy professionals. Business is not so great for, you know, folks like Bill, like your caller, and a few other callers that just called in, who are still feeling very insecure, whether they feel like on the international level, you know, things are just America's not as predominant as it once was, or on the local level where they're saying their school's crumbling, or they're saying their communities crumble, or they're working part-time on low wages. You know, they're going to have to, both parties and politicians in both parties are really going to have to make some kind of effort here to stop representing the interests of themselves as elite political professionals or elite business professionals, and really try to feel what's going on out there on the ground out there in regular America.
That'd be good for both parties. I got to get in the October surprise of sorts in these midterm elections, the Ebola pandemic. Where and how has Ebola made its way into the political arena, Josh?
Well, like I said, it feeds into this narrative that Republicans had already been spending millions of dollars on in their campaign ads, that there was an issue with government competence and management under this administration and under the senators that are up for reelection. And, you know, I tend to think that it's a hot issue right now. If over the next couple of weeks we don't see any more outbreaks, it could subside and it may not be the issue, the surprise, the decisive factor that a lot of people are saying at this point in time. But I do think it speaks to the larger issues of government management, which has been a point that if you look at all the ads in the recent weeks, management of government has been a running theme for Republicans. And they've tied President Obama with these Democratic senators in office. So I think that just underscores and feeds into that narrative that was already present in a lot of these campaign ads.
Let's get another quick call in here. Shannon in Cookeville, Tennessee. Hi, Shannon. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Not much time left, but please go ahead.
Well, you asked earlier why would anybody go to the polls this fall? And in Tennessee, there's a very good reason to go to the polls, and that is that there's an amendment on our ballot that would give the legislature the power to make abortion basically inaccessible in Tennessee, even in instances of rape, incest, or life-threatening disease.
So that is an issue for you, Shannon. Thank you very much for the call. Here's Rich in Richmond, Rhode Island. Hi, Rich. Welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. Sitting and listening to all these people, callers, and your guests there, it's kind of changing my talking points, but it's really disheartening to listen to politicians do what's right for them and do what's right for their party instead of doing what's right for our country. It's our country. And people want to give illegal immigrants driver's licenses. That gives them basically free reign to go and vote, give them the right to have all the rights that you and I as American citizens have. You don't have that right to go to another country and vote in their election. It's okay to give it to people who come here illegally and break our laws. That's just one tip of the point.
We didn't get to immigration this hour, that's for sure, Rich, but I appreciate your call and good luck to you. We've just got a minute left here. Let me hear from the panel on the heels of these midterm elections, looking ahead to 2016. Who do you think is likely to jump into the presidential arena, given what might happen in 2 weeks' time? Josh Krushauer?
I mean, I think you've got the establishment candidates that are already starting to campaign or prepare for 2016. You've got Jeb Bush, who the big question is, will he jump in the race or not? You've got Chris Christie, who's as head of the Republican Governors Association, has been campaigning across the country already for Republican governors. I think Marco Rubio is a candidate to watch out for very closely. He has a very seasoned team around him. He's younger. He's already establishing some themes that he might outline if he runs for president about the middle class security, economic security. He's been a leading voice on foreign policy. So I do think those are the three establishment favorites. And Rand Paul, you've got to think, is the Tea Party type of Republican that could get the most traction on the other side of the aisle.
One name each from our Democrat and Republican representatives here. Mona Charon, you?
Well, I also will go with Rubio. There will be a lot of talk about Rand Paul in the early days of the primaries, and then he will fizzle, that's my prediction.
Charles Ellison, last word.
Yeah, I think you should really watch Rand Paul. Definitely on the Democratic side, there's Hillary Clinton. But, don't count out Elizabeth Warren. I think that something may happen in a couple of years as far as that's concerned.
Charles Ellison, thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Thank you.
Mona Charon, appreciate your time as well. Thank you.
Pleasure.
And Josh Krosshauer, political editor at the National Review. Thank you. National Journal. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thanks, Jane.
You get the conversation today on the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.